Welcome to the Shortwave Report for January 13, 2012. I'm your host and producer, Dan Roberts. The Shortwave Report is a 30-minute review of news and opinion heard on a shortwave radio and the internet in Northern California. Listening to international broadcasts at home is quite easy. You just need a shortwave radio with a schedule of English language broadcast or a computer with an internet connection. To help you with this, I'll announce times, frequencies, and website addresses at the conclusion of each series of stories. At the website for this show, that's www.outfarpress.com, you can find a schedule for dozens of international broadcasters in English. There you can also listen to the past 5 shortwave reports, find advice for listening to shortwave at home, and find internet links for global news sources. Please check it out and tell a friend. In today's edition, you'll hear reports from NHK World Radio Japan, Germany's Radio Deutsche Welle, China Radio International, The Voice of Russia, and Radio Havana Cuba. We'll begin with NHK World Radio Japan. The United States carried out 2 series of nuclear weapons tests in 2011, leading the Atomic Bomb Museum in Hiroshima to reset its Peace Watch clock. Japan will launch a new energy policy featuring less dependency on nuclear energy. A second large solar power plant has been approved for construction in Japan. The United States has renewed deadly drone attacks in Pakistan. 3 members of the anti-whaling Sea Shepherd crew were taken into custody by the Japanese Coast Guard for actions in the Antarctic Ocean. NHK Japan.
An atomic bomb museum in Hiroshima has reset a clock known as the Peace Watch to protest nuclear tests conducted by the United States last year. The clock at the Hiroshima Peace Memorial Museum displays the number of days since the world's last nuclear test. Museum director Koichiro Maeda on Tuesday pressed the button, setting the clock back to 55, the number of days since the U.S. last carried out a test on November 16th. The number on display had been 285, the number of days since different U.S. tests in March 2011. This is the 15th time the clock has been reset since it was created in August 2001 to encourage the eradication of nuclear weapons. Director Maeda said he's very sorry that last year's tests, whatever type they are, seem to indicate the willingness of the U.S. to continue possessing nuclear weapons. He added that the city of Hiroshima, along with Nagasaki, will continue to appeal for the elimination of such weapons. Earlier, the United States revealed it conducted a new type of test using X-rays to check the performance of nuclear arms last November, the 4th in a series of similar tests.
Japan is scheduled to launch a new energy policy by the summer. The plan is expected to feature less dependency on nuclear power generation and liberalize utility fees for households. The government is conducting a thorough review of the country's energy policy in the wake of the Fukushima nuclear accident last March. On the agenda are a reduction of the nation's dependence on nuclear power generation and a possible separation of power generation and distribution. Discussions are underway at a panel of the Ministry of Economy and Industry on resources and energy. The new policy will decide when and to what level the nation's dependence on nuclear power should be reduced. It will set targets for a combination of thermal and hydropower generation and renewable energy options in the future based on cost calculations. The plan will also arrange the separation of power distribution from power generation. The revised policy is expected to show ways to invite newcomers into the nation's power industry and to liberalize utility fees for households. The government faces the challenge of securing stable energy supplies because it hasn't yet come up with clear alternatives to nuclear power. The prefectural government of Kanagawa is to build and run a massive solar power plant as part of its efforts to promote the use of renewable energy. The plant will be constructed on government-owned property of about 32,000 square meters in the town of Aikawa. Its planned output annually is 1.8 million kilowatt hours, enough to meet demand by about 520 households. The generated power will be sold to a power company. Construction work is due to begin in the next fiscal year, which starts in April. The plant will start full-scale operations, hopefully by the following year's summer. The Kanagawa government also plans to build another solar power plant in a different location, which will be chosen from among 13 candidate sites, owned publicly or privately, by the end of March. The government is to recruit the plant's operator. In Kanagawa, a solar power plant, one of the largest in Japan, went into operation last month in a coastal area of Kawasaki. It was built jointly by the municipal government of Kawasaki and Tokyo Electric Power Company.
The United States has carried out its first drone attack in Pakistan since an errant airstrike killed 24 Pakistani soldiers in late November. A Pakistani government official told NHK that the unmanned aircraft launched an attack in the northwest of the country on early Wednesday, killing at least three people. U.S. forces, including the CIA, have used drones to attack the terrorist organization Al-Qaeda and other Islamist groups in Pakistan. But civilian casualties have fueled anti-U.S. sentiment among the Pakistani people. In an apparent effort to prevent relations with Pakistan from worsening further, the U.S. suspended the use of drones following the fatal November airstrikes by helicopters and fighter jets. The resumption of the attacks will almost certainly be opposed by Pakistan. The Pakistani government may respond by continuing to shut down key supply routes used by international forces stationed in Afghanistan.
The anti-whaling group Sea Shepherd has tried to obstruct a Japanese patrol ship escorting the country's whaling fleet off the southwest of Australia. The patrol boat reported no damage and no injuries from the incident. The Japanese Fisheries Agency said members of the Sea Shepherd Conservation Society on Wednesday threw ropes and wires from its boat onto the agency's patrol ship, the Shonan Maru No. 2. The agency says the offensive continued for about an hour, even though the Coast Guard on the patrol boat hurled non-lethal warning shells. The patrol ship was carrying three people associated with the Sea Shepherd group when it was attacked. The three Australian nationals illegally boarded the patrol ship on Sunday and were detained at that time. Sea Shepherd has undertaken a long-standing anti-whaling campaign to disrupt Japan's research whaling.
Those reports were from NHK World Radio Japan, heard from 9 to 9:30 p.m. at 6110 or on the web at www.nhk.or.jp. All the times I'm announcing are for Pacific Standard Time, so adjust them to your time zone. Next, Germany's Radio Deutsche Welle. National strikes continue in Nigeria, caused by fuel and commodity price hikes. In addition, radical Muslim groups have been attacking Christian churches. Iran blames Israel and the United States for another car bombing which killed another Iranian nuclear scientist. Radio Deutsche Welle.
Eight people were killed on Tuesday after suspected Boko Haram Islamists opened fire on a bar in northeastern Nigeria. This was the latest in a series of attacks blamed on Boko Haram. This came on a second day of national strikes against fuel price hikes. Elsewhere, an attack on a mosque complex in the southern city of Benin killed five people. Since Christmas Day, attacks on places of worship have claimed at least 50 lives. Nigeria is roughly divided between a predominantly Christian south and a mainly Muslim north.
Nigeria remains in crisis with thousands of protesters defying a government order to end a strike over a doubling of fuel prices and an online video released by the radical Islamist group Boko Haram. In it, its suspected leader claimed that recent attacks, including church bombings at Christmas, were justified. On Wednesday, the Nigerian Red Cross said about 8,000 people had fled the ancient city of Benin after an attack on a mosque on Tuesday that had left five people dead. In Lagos, on Wednesday, gangs attacked a police car with sticks while 10,000 people held a peaceful rally to demand lower fuel prices. At Mena, in central Nigeria, a governor fled a crowd. One policeman was reportedly killed. Earlier this week, President Goodluck Jonathan's government removed subsidies, saying that the funds should instead flow into public infrastructure projects such as roading. Correspondents say many Nigerians subsisting on $2 a day believe politicians are out to get rich. Iran has blamed Israel and the United States for a car bombing in Tehran that killed an Iranian nuclear scientist and his driver. State television said Professor Mostafa Ahmadi Roshan had been a deputy director of Iran's main uranium enrichment facility in Natanz. For years, the United States and its allies have been pressing Iran to halt enrichment. In Washington, a White House spokesman said the United States had nothing to do with the killing. From Jerusalem, DW correspondent Tanya Kramer.
Tehran has always blamed these killings, and also we're talking about some other attacks like cyber attacks on a nuclear program. It always has blamed Israel and the U.S. Of course, both countries deny these accusations, and I assume that this time it will be no different. We will not hear anything official here.
U.S.-Iranian relations worsened on Monday with an Iranian court sentencing to death of an American-Iranian accused of spying.
Those reports were from Germany's Radio Deutsche Welle, which may be heard at a combined audio-video website, mediacenter.dw-world.de. Next, China Radio International. On Tuesday, Syrian President Assad made rare public appearances and called the ongoing civil war a Western plot. On Wednesday, a French journalist was killed by a rocket fired on a crowd of Assad supporters. A report on this week's attempt to stem the European debt crisis by establishing the Intergovernmental Treaty, which the UK recently blocked. China Radio International.
Syrian President Bashar al-Assad has made a rare appearance in a public square in Damascus. Assad's appearance surprised tens of thousands of his supporters, who staged a massive rally in support of his administration. Assad pled with his supporters to join him and defeat the plot of destabilizing Syria. He said the conspirators are in their final stage.
Syrian President Bashar al-Assad has made a rare appearance in downtown Damascus, greeting thousands of his supporters. Public appearance comes just a day after his first speech to the Syrian people in some half a year. Meantime, on the ground in other parts of Syria, the uprising against Assad's rule continues. Unidentified gunmen fired rocket-propelled grenades into a crowd of people in the rest of city of Homs yesterday, killing seven, including a French journalist. 43-year-old Gilles Jacquier, with France's Channel 2, was interviewing a group of pro-government supporters when he was killed.
The leaders of France and Germany now say boosting economic growth across Europe is a priority in their effort to stem the European debt crisis. As part of his plans, French President Nicolas Sarkozy says he wants European leaders to act quickly on a new intergovernmental treaty.
Nous souhaitons que le traité intergouvernemental...
We want the intergovernmental treaty to be looked at over the next few days, and for negotiations to be concluded in the coming days, and for the treaty to be signed on the 1st of March.
26 of the EU's 27 members have already agreed in principle to the intergovernmental treaty, a fiscal compact to stabilize the euro. The UK is the only holdout. Meanwhile, a new 500 billion euro EU bailout fund, the European Stability Mechanism, is going to be launched in July, a year earlier than originally planned. The existing fund, the 440 billion euro European Financial Stability Facility, is considered too weak to rescue a major eurozone economy such as Italy or Spain. Sarkozy is also suggesting France could introduce a financial transaction tax as early as February, while Germany is maintaining a position that any tax like that has to be EU-wide. The UK government says it will only consider introducing a financial transaction tax if there's global agreement on it, with UK Prime Minister David Cameron worried the introduction of such a tax would have a negative impact on London as one of the world's financial centres. At the same time, German Chancellor Angela Merkel also says an agreement with Greek bondholders has to come soon for Greece to receive a vital second bailout.
Unsere Absicht ist, dass kein Land.
Our intention is that no country has to leave the Eurozone. We always say that Greece is a special case. If you look in detail, you will see that the investment of private creditors is necessary to bring Greece back on track. And of course, the measures Greece agreed on with the Troika need to be implemented.
Greece needs a second EU IMF top-up to avoid a default and possible exclusion from the Eurozone. The rescue package worth 130 billion euros would include a voluntary restructuring of Greek debt, meaning bondholders would have to write off 50% of the Greek bond's value. Merkel is due to meet with the International Monetary Fund chief Christine Lagarde on the same issue later on this Tuesday. For CRI, this is Ding Lulu.
Those reports were from China Radio International, heard from 4 to 5 p.m. at 11970 and from 6 p.m. to 11 at either 9790, 6020 or 6190 or on the web at english.cri.cn. On to the Voice of Russia. U.S. President Obama has announced plans to strengthen the U.S. military in the Asian Pacific region. China strongly disagrees with the U.S. need to prioritize their presence in their area. The Voice of Russia.
On Monday, China announced that it considers the U.S. plans to strengthen its presence in the Asia-Pacific region unreasonable and groundless. At the press conference on January the 9th, a spokesman for China's Ministry of Foreign Affairs, Liu Weimin, made a statement that China does not pose any threat to the United States. According to Weimin, Washington has misinterpreted Beijing's intention to modernize its armed forces. The spokesman emphasized that China's main goal is to maintain peace in the Asia-Pacific region.
These statements represent Chinese officials' first reactions to a new strategy emerging from the Pentagon, which was unveiled last Thursday by the U.S. President Barack Obama. In his speech, Obama stressed the importance of a comprehensive defensive review and announced new priorities for the development of the United States military. Obama stated that U.S. foreign policy will be focused on strengthening the U.S. presence in the Asia-Pacific. The president also made it clear that budget reductions will not come at the expense of this critical region.
Obama's speech at the Pentagon once again reinforced the main goal of the United States defense policy, to maintain military superiority with armed forces that are agile, flexible, and ready for the full range of contingencies and threats. Though the growth of the American defense budget is slowing, it still remains the largest in the world, remaining larger than roughly the next 10 countries combined. Obama particularly emphasized that the military budget is presently larger than it was toward the end of the Bush administration.
Under the new strategy, the United States will maintain large bases in Japan and South Korea and deploy U.S. Marines, Navy ships, and aircraft to Australia's Northern Territory. The strategy calls for countering potential attempts by China and Iran to block U.S. capabilities in the Asian Pacific region.
On Monday, China's Ministry of Defense warned the United States to be careful in its words and actions. Geng Yangsheng, the ministry's spokesman, made a statement that China will closely observe the impact that the U.S. military strategic adjustment has on the Asia-Pacific region and on global security developments.
China's foreign ministry spokesman, Weimin, noted that China adheres to the path of peaceful development, an independent and peaceful foreign policy, and a defensive national defense policy. The main concern of the United States lies in the growing military power of China. Over the last years, China has been expanding its naval might along with its missile and surveillance capabilities. According to Weimin, China's national defense modernization serves the objective requirements of its national security and development, and it is a positive factor in maintaining regional peace and stability. Weimin underscored that China's strategic intent is clear, open, and transparent.
On Tuesday, the People's Liberation Army's newspaper in China expressed great concern about true intentions of the United States. Major General Luo Yuan, in his commentary in the paper, warned that the United States is laying out forces across the Asia-Pacific region to contain the rise of China. Yuan added that Washington's assertions that refocused military strategy is not directed at China are simply making their real intent all the more obvious. Yuan, who is well known for his hawkish views and is often published in popular Chinese newspapers, raises the main question in the article. Who can believe that the U.S. is not directing this at China? Isn't this the return of a Cold War mentality?
China's official Xinhua news agency also commented on the U.S. defense plan, saying the United States is welcome to contribute to peace and stability in the region, but that any militarism will cause ill will and be met with strong opposition. In its generally restrained commentary, Xinhua said the U.S. should abstain from flexing its muscles, as this will not help to solve regional disputes. The British newspaper The Times also expressed concerns and said that President Obama was sending a clear warning signal to China.
Russia, one of China's main strategic partners, has not yet made an official statement about the latest development in the Asia-Pacific region, including the United States' new military strategy and the reaction from China. However, Russia and China, both members of BRICS, share similar views on key international problems and are pursuing the same policies.
Chinese media has expressed deep concern over the latest U.S. defense plan and warned that it could damage Sino-American relations. In an interview with the Global Times newspaper, a defense expert from the Renmin University, Jin Kenron, said the U.S. feels threatened by China's rapid development. He warned the new American strategy will make Beijing uncomfortable and could affect bilateral relations.
That report was from the Voice of Russia. Russia is now heard from 6 p.m. to 10 at 12030, 13665, 9840, and 7250, or through their website, www.english.ruvr.ru. If you have questions or comments about the shortwave report or would like to make a donation for a production cost of this unfunded program, I may be reached through the website or by writing to Dan Roberts at P.O. Box 1162, Willits, California, 95490. I'm really grateful for any donations to help support this program, which may be securely sent through the PayPal link up at my website. We will conclude with Radio Havana, Cuba. The elections in Egypt concluded with an overwhelming victory for Islamic parties, especially the Muslim Brotherhood. As U.S. drone strikes return to Pakistan, Congress reports that 31% of all U.S. military aircraft are now drones, compared to just 5% in 2005. Human rights activists around the world held protest on the 10th anniversary of the U.S. military presence at Guantanamo Bay. A viewpoint on Iranian President Ahmadinejad's visit to Venezuela and four other Latin American nations. Radio Havana, Cuba.
The first elections of the Egyptian People's Assembly after the overthrow of Hosni Mubarak ended today with an apparent overwhelming victory of Islamist parties. Ban under Mubarak, the Muslim Brotherhood has emerged as a major winner from the uprising that toppled Mubarak, drawing support from all well-organized base and the legislative elections. Islamist organizations and parties are expected to win 60% of the 498 elected seats in the assembly's lower house, with the Muslim Brotherhood taking some 41%. Egypt's three-stage parliamentary elections began on November 28th last year and drew an unprecedented turnout. Under a complex system, one-third of the seats are reserved for individuals, with some of them to be decided in runoff elections. The other two-thirds are decided by proportional representation among party lists. Egypt's lower house is slated to hold its first session on January 23rd. At least three people have been killed in a suspected U.S. drone attack in Pakistan. If confirmed, the drone strike would mark the first inside Pakistan in nearly 2 months. In other news, new figures show that drones now account for a major portion of the U.S. military's aircraft. According to a recent Congressional Research Service report, 31% of all U.S. military aircraft are drones, compared with just 5% in 2005. Human rights activists around the world are marking the 10th anniversary of the U.S. military prison at Guantanamo. Former Guantanamo prisoners and legal advocates gathered in London on Tuesday to protest the military prison while a National Day of Action is being held in the United States. Activists are holding a major protest in Washington, D.C., where they plan to form a human chain stretching from the White House to the Capitol. In France, Amnesty International said said two Algerian prisoners are living in virtual destitution after being released from Guantanamo. Amnesty is calling on the French government to hand over payments for the United States for taking in the prisoners following their release. The 10th anniversary of Guantanamo comes on the heels of U.S. President Barack Obama's recent endorsement of the National Defense Authorization Act, which mandates indefinite military custody for al-Qaeda suspects and would make it even harder to free Guantanamo detainees. Clive Stafford Smith of the legal charity Reprieve said dozens of Guantanamo prisoners will remain behind bars despite being cleared for release. On January 11, 2002, the administration of former U.S. President George W. Bush began sending suspected terrorists to Guantanamo, which is located on illegally occupied Cuban territory, despite promises by the Obama White House to close down the facility where many prisoners have been subjected to abuse and torture. The prison remains open.
Working for mutual and peaceful development is the essence of the relations of 50 years between Venezuela and Iran, who have strengthened these bonds in recent times with the signing of the important economic and trade agreements. The sectors of energy, construction, and technology transfer are among the objectives of the current cooperation between the two nations, established after the last visit of Venezuelan President Hugo Chavez to Tehran in October 2010. Now, with the recent trip to Caracas of Iranian President Mahmoud Ahmadinejad, there is a new boost in these ties based on mutual respect and supported by the right of two sovereign nations to maintain relations for the benefit of both peoples. Our relations with the countries of Latin America are very good and are still developing. The culture of the peoples of this region and its historic demands are similar to the demands of the Iranian people, said the president of the Persian state. And the truth is that in recent years, the people of Iran and Latin America and the Caribbean have intensified the relations. During his mandate, Ahmadinejad visited Venezuela, Brazil, Nicaragua, Bolivia, Ecuador, and Cuba. During his visit to Caracas in 2009, 68 bilateral cooperation projects in agriculture, industry, trade, and energy were signed. These bilateral economic cooperation agreements are worth around $5,000 million. At that time, the unique binational fund Iran-Venezuela was created to stimulate production and investment between both states. Thus, important economic programs are being promoted with the collaboration of the Persian nation in Venezuela, as the construction of the modern plant for the production of cement, which is scheduled for late June. The recent visit is to strengthen the bonds of two states, who also share in OPEC, the Organization of Petroleum Exporting Countries, the defense of the same fundamental natural resources. Caracas has rejected U.S. pressure and the European community against the Persian nation and has defended Tehran's right to develop its nuclear program for peaceful purposes and only seeks to increase the quality of life of its people. The current visit to Caracas is part of a tour by the Iranian president of several countries in the region, including Nicaragua, Cuba, and Ecuador, countries which also have excellent bonds of cooperation. For Radio Havana, Cuba, Editorial Desk, I'm Nassau James.
Those reports were from Radio Havana, Cuba, heard from 2 to 3 p.m. at 11760 and from 4 to 11 p.m. at either 6060, 6010, or 6000. Also streaming on the web from 4 to 11 p.m. at www.radiohc.cu and now podcasting at World Radio Network, which is wrn.org. All the times I've announced are for Pacific Standard Time. Please adjust them to your time zone. One of my goals in producing this show is to encourage you to listen to international broadcasts using a shortwave radio at home, or if you use the internet, you can listen globally quite easily. See the links at this program's website. Every Friday morning, I post a new shortwave report at the website for this show. That's www.outfarpress.com. At my website, you can also listen to past shows, find internet links for international broadcasters, make a safe donation through PayPal, and get advice for listening at home. The shortwave report is free to rebroadcast upon notification. The shortwave report is produced and distributed off the electrical grid in Northern California using solar panels. I'm your host and producer, Dan Roberts. Thanks for listening.